shit. You know, this podcast may contain explicit material. That's shit.
That's perfectly fine.
I ran here. Well, I didn't run. I walked briskly because of a scheduling mix-up, and my guest, Kaz Weta, has been waiting here for patiently for probably 2 or 3 hours now.
Oh, certainly. Maybe 4 or 5. I don't know.
A long time.
I lost count.
This is the Let's Go Eat Show, and we're once again coming to you from the Daily in downtown Salt Lake, 222 South Main. It's in the big banking building. Why can't I ever think of Goldman Sachs? Dick goes, Goldman Sachs, Bill, every time. Goldman Sachs.
Who could forget Goldman Sachs?
Well, you know, I've tried to forget them because Goldman Sachs, the last owner of our radio station, got in bed with Goldman Sachs and never got out. Goldman Sachs finally just said, okay, you know, we're done. It was not pretty. At any rate, hi, it's the Let's Go Eat Show, and my guest is, as I said, Kaz Weta. And, you know, I wanted to do this because I've met you now. This is probably the fifth time we've been.
Yeah.
And I don't have any idea who you are.
I think most of the world shares that perception. Who is she?
Well, no, but I mean, so you first came onto my radar because Chris Van Oker said, "I have this. There's this, somebody's going to be on the Van Oker group. Her name is Kaz Weta. You know Kaz, don't you?" And I said, "No, I don't." Now, when I mentioned your name to some other people, they said, "Oh yeah, Kaz Weta. I know who that is." But you just had not for some.
Yeah.
Had not appeared on my screens somehow. And so I met you recording the Van Oka group, and I thought, it's an intriguing, interesting person. And then again, and then I looked you up a little bit, and I went, oh, this is interesting. As I look at your presence online, I try to figure out where you are and what you do exactly.
It's a mystery. Every day I ask myself the same question, so it's a good question.
But whatever it is you do, you seem to be able to support yourself doing it.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
But that's incredible because you are essentially a self-employed person.
Yeah, for what it's worth these days, I mean, yes, I am the flagship member of the gig economy.
You are the Kaz Weta Incorporated. And so I look online and I say, and I, you know, now I have a Twitter. That's the only thing I do much with socially is Twitter. Yeah. And I look at it and I go, oh, I got about 11,000 followers, which is, you know, which means there are probably 200 active ones.
Sure.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, if that.
Yeah.
And then I look at you, you have 71. What? How many? 75?
It's 71, almost 72,000.
Yeah. And I think, what do all these people know that I don't know?
That I hang out on Twitter a lot.
So is that the key? The I just have to hang out more.
Well, it's also that you know, I joined Twitter after Trump was elected. I actually been on Twitter that long, and I realized pretty quickly when I became part of Rant and we all started sort of working together and creating content together, I realized pretty quickly that Twitter was a good platform for journalists specifically to market and to amplify their content. And so I just dug in and figured out the more I tweeted, the more volume I sort of got and started to try to create a following. It took a couple years. I mean, that doesn't happen overnight.
But you set out with it in your mind, I mean, so I'm going to create a following for myself on Twitter.
I think of it less as a following and more as a community. I want my space to be a community. I have a little corner of the Twitterverse. I am associated with a couple of other accounts that, you know, I message with and chat with, and we amplify certain kinds of content and tweets. And I try to keep my space clean.
You're way more savvy about this than I am.
I do filter people out. I do block people if I find that the discourse is not constructive. perspective.
Well, let's okay. So let's go back to something you said. I got together with Rant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to explain what that is.
Well, we owe this to Jason Chaffetz.
Really? That's where this all came from?
This all happened because of Jason Chaffetz. I exist because Jason Chaffetz is an asshole.
Please don't. Well, yes, he is an asshole, but please don't. Have you heard the story about the first time I ever met Jason Chaffetz?
I have not heard the story.
He was running for Congress the very first time. We didn't know who he was. And we had this sort of open door policy, and we, I mean the Radio from Hell show, said anybody running for any office, we don't care. You can come in.
Oh, dear.
You can come in, and we'll put you on the radio for a second and let... And it doesn't matter what office you're running for. It could be local council. It could be, you know, a neighborhood association, whatever. We don't care. We'll give you a couple minutes to say your name and what you believe in and that. And he came in. And the time that he said he was coming in and actually coming in, I did a little research and looked up and saw who he was. And the first thing I said to him is I stuck out my hand and I said, "Hi, nice to meet you." And he said, "Likewise." And I said, "You scare me." And we didn't get along after that.
Well, I haven't had personal interactions with him, but I was at his famous town hall where he got booed and heckled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one he keeps bringing up, and it's in his new book.
Oh, is it?
It's in his new book. He said, yeah, there were plants and right-wing...
Our
left-wing plants and, you know, fake news people.
It's funny that he says that because I watched everyone walk home from the high school auditorium to their house, which was a block away.
Mm-hmm.
So those were all his constituents, as was I. But I wrote about that and posted it. I think what happened is that I posted something about it on Twitter or on Facebook, and someone from Rant caught it and asked me if I would write a little bit about it. And so I did. And then that kind of went viral a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the extent that the next piece that I did went viral. But then I wrote an open letter to the constituents, to America, from the constituents of Jason Chaffetz. That went viral. That was on HuffPost.
I recently read that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it just sort of snowballed from there. But I owe that to Jason, really, that the visibility is his fault.
So explain to people. So Rant was already in existence. Explain to people what Rant is.
Rant is...
And that's R-A-N-T-T.
Yes. Rant is a publication. They've been around for a couple of years now. They are a pretty small outfit, and their job... as they see it, is to speak truth to power. So they don't believe that media should amplify and act as a microphone. They believe that everything should always be framed and in context. So a lot of the pieces that they do, they will wait to write something until they feel like they have all the facts and they have a perspective that makes sense. And then they will produce articles and content surrounding that.
Yeah, that's interesting, and it's really it makes me stop and think about what I do every day. And really what I do every day is just kind of amplify, mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly. I guess I do really try to contextualize at certain points, but there's 4 hours every day of just you're just echoing back what's happening.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's, you know, people need to hear that, I think. But putting things, finding a context for it and then speaking about it, that's really more important. Did you see that? I had no idea who Eddie Gloud is. Eddie Gloud, is that his name? Wasn't it? He's a professor at Princeton, and he just on MSNBC spoke about the shootings that just occurred.
Mm-hmm.
He's a man of color and studied religion, and he is brilliant, and he put things in a context which is so nuanced and so powerful that it made me stop and think we need to do more of that.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that this week in the headlines quite a few times, where you've got people like CNN or the New York Times simply saying, "Hey, Trump said this. Trump wants unity instead of blah blah blah," and that that headline exists in a vacuum because it does not include any of the years of other rhetoric that he said before this, and it doesn't frame it in any sort of reality.
Well, that's why you have to go to the editorial pages and the opinion pages and things like that of any publication.
Yeah.
So Rant liked what you did and published you.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the first time you really were sort of freelance journaling? And
well, it's interesting. My background is in education, but when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a journalist and I wanted to be a writer. And my parents said, "Oh, sweetie, that's not a real job." And I said, "Really?" And they're like, "Yeah, no, you can't make money that way." And to some extent, they're right. But that was what I really wanted to do. I went to college and I ended up, because I had to put myself through school, I ended up at a program that did not have a journalism degree. I thought it was communications and I could leverage that into maybe TV journalism, mm-hmm. but it wasn't that kind of communications. It was speech and speech therapy.
Where was this?
University of New Hampshire.
Okay.
So I ended up going into English, and then after a couple of years, I thought, well, what the hell am I going to do with this? So then I pivoted it a little bit to English education, and I graduated with a degree in English education, and I went into the educational field, and I kind of stuck there, both in, I was director of preschools, I worked for WGU, I puttered around for about 20 years.
You were employed?
Yes.
You had people who said, yeah, okay, well, you're hired and we'll pay you this amount to do what you do.
I did corporate training. I did all sorts of things. And about 5 years ago, my daughter was still very young and I was at home and I thought, well, what the heck? I'm not doing anything and I'm bored. And I need to do something. So let's see if I can write.
You weren't working at that point?
I wasn't, because my daughter was still very young, and she was still breastfeeding, actually. And it didn't make sense for us to work. We're one of those households where it costs me more to put two kids in childcare than it does for me to work, because I already make so little in my industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at home, and I started writing, and I started trying to find jobs, and it was tough.
Just trying to find places that would pay you for what you were writing.
Yeah. I would go onto platforms like Upwork, and it was like a race to the bottom because you're getting outbid by someone in China who's going to write for 5 cents a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to build my resume. Eventually, I got noticed by a marketing company. I went and worked for them, and then I became a writer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just happened. I just kept at it until I built a portfolio, and then I was able to retire from that position and go home and start my own business mm-hmm. and build it slowly.
And then there's another aspect of what you do.
Yes.
And it's almost at odds, I think, with with that image, in a way. When I first thought of you and kind of tried to pigeonhole you, if it were, says, okay, so here's a writer, a critical thinker of politics and culture, and really, you know, a serious. Mm-hmm. And then I say, wait, there's this, what's it called? A Sweet Little Life.
A Sweet Little Life, yeah.
Website. I wonder what that is. Click on it. And it's a nice, very nice, very lovely photography and recipes and home styling and living. And and it is kind of different than that image.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
so tell me about A Sweet Little Life.
It's sort of a side passion. I love food.
Did it come second to what you're doing now? Or?
It actually happened at right about the same time.
Okay.
And originally, I think I sort of started tripping down the path of the traditional mommy blogger, right? Mm. I had some pieces run on Scary Mommy that were pretty popular. And I thought, all right, well, I need a website, and I'm really into food, and maybe I can teach myself food photography. So I did that. I took a course or two, and I taught myself how to shoot food, and it took a while and a lot of practice.
It's good. They're very nice, too.
And that's, you know, if you saw my first ones, you would not say that. But eventually they got better. And it just sort of grew organically from that interest. I love specifically desserts. So the blog is tailored towards craft cocktails and desserts.
Mm-hmm.
I develop my own recipes. All the photography is mine. It slowed down a little bit because I'm really busy in other areas of my life, but I still try to do something at least every season on the blog.
It's a nice website. It looks good, and there's some interesting stuff on it. And I think it would be interesting if you like had an employee, sort of, that, you know, because it's worth keeping that and developing that, I think.
I've had actually someone recently approach me, and I'm going to ghostwrite and photograph their cookbook. But he said to me, because he runs his own marketing firm, and he said, "I looked at your website. Why do you not have your own cookbook?" And I said, so maybe that's next.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
It is.
So now I have a kind of an idea, I think, of who you are a little bit or what you do. Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Can I ask you about your tattoos?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong about asking about them because you display them quite prominently.
Yes.
Every time I've been around you, they've not been covered up. They're
right.
So
yeah.
So can you talk about it a little bit?
I think I feel I don't know. I feel like I don't even think about them anymore. They're just part of who I am. But I will notice if I go outside of Salt Lake City and travel someplace else or travel to Florida and people stare at me and I'm like, why? Oh, it just takes me a minute for it to click. Oh, they're looking at the tattoos. Because in Salt Lake City, actually, everyone has tattoos.
It seems like it.
Yeah. I think it's a counterculture thing where you have a culture that is specifically pretty religious, pretty conservative in the state. And so you naturally get a response to that, which is the opposite, which is very liberal, bucking those norms. And I think that's probably why we have. I think Salt Lake City has more tattoo shops per square foot than any other city in America.
It's check cashing places and tattoo parlors. It really is.
Yeah.
It's a really, you designed them yourself, I would take it.
So what I did, this is all Matt Miskell from Yellow Rose. What I did was I went to Matt and I said, I want sleeves. I've wanted sleeves forever. I love the way they look. I know I'm kind of older, but I want sleeves. And he said, well, what are you thinking? And I said, I kind of love the freehand stuff when people draw henna, in henna on farmers markets and stuff. And I said, I love the way that looks. Can you do that? And he's like, well, we can. And I said, and then I want a bunch of words. And he's like, okay. This is sort of different aesthetics. And he helped me nail it down, and we worked on kind of a piece at a time. So it took me about a year to do both arms.
Is it a completed work?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of square footage maybe somewhere where I could cram something in, but we sort of designed these to reflect each other. There's balance to the design and the way that they're spaced. So I don't know that I would add anything to it at this point.
Do you ever get people saying, do you mind if I read your arms?
I have people who come up to me and don't say anything, but grab my arms and start yelling, oh, come here, come look at this. Did you see her arms? To people across the room.
Yeah.
And it's a little awkward.
It's pretty distinct. I mean, as tattoos, you know, go, you know, when you're talking sleeves, people are probably, I would picture sort of a lot of color and really filled in and stuff.
Yeah.
They're sleeves, but there's a lot of, I wouldn't say white space, flesh space.
Yes.
Amongst the, you know, to separate things, but it's unique. It's very unique.
They're only black and white, and there are a few quotes from some of my favorite books and my favorite authors, but the rest of it is very sort of Eastern, Indian aesthetic.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about social issues now.
Okay.
We've got some of that stuff out of the way. Let's talk about, I don't know, you know, what's fresh on our minds, of course, is the...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shooting in El Paso and in Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say Akron. Wait, you know, I was going to do the same...
Don't pull a Trump.
Or a Biden,
right.
who got two of them wrong. He said Houston, and what did he say? And then Michigan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Houston and Michigan. So Biden is... And being on the Van Oker Group, you know my feelings about Joe Biden.
Yes.
He'll do something to screw this up. We can talk about that. Do you want to talk about that?
We can, if
okay.
you want to.
Just share your thoughts on all of that.
I I think that at this point, if you're not absolutely furious, I don't understand where you're at mm-hmm. with this. There is no other way to feel about this anymore. There's sorrow, certainly, and there's grief, but I'm just angry now. Mm-hmm. I'm angry that I live in a country where I cannot send my kids to school without worrying about them being shot. But I also live in a country where I can't take them to the grocery store and worry about getting shot anywhere.
Stand in line for a movie.
And it doesn't matter if it's a city. It doesn't matter if it's a suburb. It doesn't matter if it's a rural town. This is a problem everywhere in America. And there have been plenty of studies and research, and the results are very conclusive.
It's video games.
Yeah, sure.
No?
It's guns. I mean, more guns equals more gun violence. It's a really simple equation. And it's something we can prevent. It's something we can do something about. And it's so frustrating to sit here and watch people die and feel powerless.
We could even do something about it without banning all guns.
Right, and no one is even arguing about banning all guns. That's not even what people are are really interested in doing at this point. Yeah. I think most folks in America would be satisfied with the typical things. Background checks. We need to ban assault weapons. We let that ban expire. We need to ban assault weapons. And we need to close loopholes for private sales and gun shows.
This guy that I was mentioning, he said, we're not going to get over any of this until we realize that it's Donald Trump isn't the problem.
No.
We got to get over. What we need to remember is that this has always been us. This is the dark side of us, and it has always been us, but we refuse to admit it. We refuse to admit that there is this dark side to us and that there is racism. We say, no, we're a golden, shining city on a hill. We're the best country in the world, but we're not.
Yeah.
We are not. And we heap it on Trump's shoulders. He's just the manifestation of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And we have to realize that it's woven throughout society. This racism, this violence.
Sure.
And I just thought that was a very telling. Maybe when we start admitting that to ourselves, then we will say, and because we are this way, we need to take these measures to deal with it.
Yeah. And Trump's really just a symbol. If he goes away, you still have the 25% of Americans who voted for him and who supported him no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what he said.
Yeah.
Supported him through very fine people, supported him mm-hmm. through all of this. Those people don't just disappear when Trump does.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about... I've been wanting to ask you about it, and it just never has come up. You associate, I know, with the Me Too movement pretty strongly. It's mm-hmm. part of your profile. And I've been wanting to ask you about Al Franken because he was in the story about him in The New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was reading that, and then I started listening. You know, he started doing a podcast since he was ousted from the Senate.
Sure.
I think it took him a while to get there. Apparently, he was very depressed. And
who could blame him, right?
Very depressed and just out of it for a while. But I've been listening to his podcast for about 10 episodes of it, which he doesn't talk about any of that stuff, really. He talks about other issues. And he's still Al Franken. He's a really smart guy and a really entertaining guy. But what about that whole thing? What happened there in your estimation?
I mean, I think anyone who knows Al Franken's previous history before he came to the Senate is not super surprised to find some raunchy things in his background, right? I mean, he's always been pretty above board about mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And certainly we live in a moment in our history where those sorts of things are definitely under the spotlight. So, I mean, it was Al Franken railroaded to a certain extent? Probably. The moment was a bad one, and he got caught in it.
Yeah.
And he had things in his past that could have been used against him as ammunition, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of other politicians who I'm sure the GOP would love to railroad, but they don't have that ammunition in their past. And so I think... we need to be careful, obviously, moving forward, learn lessons from what happened to Al, which is really unfortunate, and try to make sure that moving forward, when we use the Me Too movement to shape calling people to account, that we do it with a very clear idea of what we're accusing folks of.
I think it's interesting that it's made us all, at least it's made, when I say us all, I guess I mean men, kind of even more aware of, I mean, I think of myself as, you know, a feminist, I suppose, or a someone who certainly believes that women are
sure,
in every way intellectually equal to men, and you know, and should be afforded the same opportunities as men. I am a man, and there are things within me that are probably, I don't want to say sexist, but
sure,
but just, you know,
there are things within me that are sexist.
There's a maleness and a femaleness, and
right, we are products of this society, and we live in a patriarchal society, and
yeah,
you participate in that system whether you like it or not.
I really grew up in it, strongly grew
yeah,
up in it,
absolutely,
yeah.
and we have to acknowledge that's just part of who we are. But to the extent with which we can be transparent about what we struggle with and try to learn lessons from those things and do it with honesty between, you know, both men and women, and mm-hmm, just try to move forward and make progress, that's how it's going to be helpful.
I've told the story before, but this is many years ago. It really came home to me. I was working with a woman that I really liked. I mean, I thought she was just great and smart and beautiful. And I came into work one day, and she was bending over, and I tapped her on the butt. Because we were friendly. We were very friendly.
Sure.
And she stood up and turned around and looked at me and said, I love you, but if you ever, and I just went, what? You know, I didn't know I was, you know,
uh-huh,
I,
yeah,
to me it was a, you know, it was a harmless, affectionate thing.
Sure.
But just, if you ever do that again, I won't talk to you.
And that's that difference in perceptions, right? We've seen a lot of accounts where women have said, this felt exploitive to me. This felt scary to me.
And the guy goes, oh,
what?
I didn't, huh?
And he's having a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And so if anything comes out of all of this, I hope it's that men understand that sometimes they need to just be more aware of how their actions could be perceived by others. Not because they're in any danger or they don't want to be falsely accused, but because they should be genuinely concerned about how women are feeling and what they think in those
yeah,
situations, and whether they're making someone afraid.
And sometimes, and I would say this as a man, you may still not see it. And you may,
sure,
you may even still say to yourself, I just don't get it. I don't know what I did. But you still have to say, however, the perception is there, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that's all. I think that's, you know, who really kind of dealt with this recently, and I don't know if he was altogether successful, but Aziz Ansari.
Yep.
Did you watch his?
Mm-hmm.
I
yep,
was pretty impressed that he decided to come out and do a stand up, do a routine about it, and he did it about other things. He spent a long time kind of addressing the whole thing, and
yeah,
and I'm not sure he was completely successful, but I think he certainly demonstrated that he's struggled with it and tried to come to some understanding of it. And then I would also point out, he looked like hell. Did you know? He was so skinny, I couldn't
oh,
believe it.
Yeah.
He'd lost a lot of weight. But I really love talking like this. You know, we should do this more often, because I think it at least for me, it's kind of it's sort of healing, you know. It,
yeah,
you think, oh, there, you know, we can make these things okay. We can deal with each other, and I just really enjoy it. And we should talk more like this. You
we
and
absolutely
I
absolutely should. Thank
yeah,
you for suggesting it.
We've just got a couple minutes left here. What's next for Kaz Wade? Do you know?
Well.
And what kind of a name is Kaz? Weta.
You know what? It's a nickname.
Kaz, I thought was probably.
Yeah, my real name is not that. but I've gone by it since college. It's something my grandfather used to call me when I was little because he said I was like the Tasmanian devil.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Weta is...
my married name.
Uh-huh. Married name.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just got a... When people say, it's Kaz Weta, you go... What is that? What is a Casueta?
Is it some sort of German product?
Yeah. What is it? Is it a timepiece? I've got a brand new Casueta. It's a wonderful watch. So what's next for you? What are you...
You know, I'm busy writing, as always. Yes, I'm ghostwriting a cookbook right now. And I'm actually sort of trying to dig my way out of some health things. And hopefully I'll get that squared away. But then I think I'm really just going to focus on figuring out what's next. I think sometimes we don't pause and sit and think. We just wait until things come to us and say yes to them. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sort of getting towards the intersection of needing to sit down and say, what do I want? I can do anything I want to do. I think I've proved that to myself. So now I need to sit down and say, what do you really want to do, Kaz?
You seem very confident. Are you?
I am. And I've always been that way. I think it's my mom just... I don't know. That's just the sort of woman that she is. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything that she couldn't do. Therefore, there wasn't anything that I couldn't do. She was a single mom, and I was raised by her, and she didn't remarry till I was like 8.
Is she around? Is she,
oh, yeah.
Is she around in Utah?
No. She actually just retired. She was one of the head managers of the TSA, and she just retired 2 months ago. Well past retirement age, she just wouldn't stop working. Mm-hmm. So that's my mom.
Yeah. Well, listen, give people your how they can find you. You know, if you listen to this and you think, hey, this is an interesting person, follow her on Twitter at...
It's Kaz Weida, so it's KazWeida.
Weida. I've been saying Weida, right?
It's like Y.
Weida.
And then duh.
Weida. Yeah. Kaz Weida.
I don't mind if you mispronounce it.
Okay.
I don't know if I'll keep it forever.
It's an... Jones, Kaz
Jones.
I'm just
going to drop it and just become
Kaz.
Sure.
Why not?
Right?
Yeah. So, again, it's... and then your website is...
A Sweet Little Life.
A Sweet Little Life.
Yeah.
You'll like that. And then if you go to just Rant Media, just it's an online publication.
Yeah, I think it's rant.com. RANTT.com.
Yeah, it is. And then if you... There's a search engine there. I mean, they have good writers, but if you search Kaz's name, or just if you just put in K-A-Z, as I recall...
Yes.
Your stuff will come up.
It does. And I write a lot about women's issues, me too. I've written, though, kind of about everything, healthcare, Trump, all of that. So.
Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That's it. The Let's Go Eat Show. I'm Bill Allred. Thank you to The Daily for hosting us here, 222 South Main. If you're looking for a nice early breakfast or lunch and then brunch on Saturdays and Sunday, The Daily is a great place to be. Very comfortable, very relaxed, and it's in the Goldman Sachs building, so don't let that keep you away. No, they're fine. The Goldens, they're fine. Also, thank you, Dick Clark, for producing the show. I think that about covers it. I'm Bill Allred, and that's the Let's Go Eat Show. Remember, if you're pouring drinks, always make mine a double.